Welcome to the Motherhood Podcast, where I lift the lid on the real, raw and honest parts of mothering, motherhood and matrescence. Understanding what we're going through as we transition from a woman to a mother and beyond, and being supported and guided through this is essential to thrive in motherhood. And hearing the challenges and struggles that others have encountered and overcome helps us make sense of our own lives and fosters a feeling of connectedness and inclusion. But today we mother largely in isolation and have been robbed of these essential parts of the mothering experience. I hope this podcast will make you feel less alone and that it inspires and empowers you to mother your own unique way to support you on your path of thriving in motherhood and beyond. We're all in this together. Let's do this. Our guest today is the lovely Leila Amara, who joins us from Wicklow in Ireland, where she lives with her husband and three children. Today, we talk about Leila's mothering experiences after the birth of her three children and how they were in stark contrast to one another. Leila's first two children were born in Germany, where she had a very supportive postpartum period and was very supported by a midwife coming in, and how the culture around that postpartum is so different. Leila shares the experience of her third child, who was in the NICU after he was born, and then the experience after that, whereby she didn't rest after he was born. She felt that she couldn't stop. And she talks about that superwoman addiction of having to do everything, not being able to stop. Talks about all the things that she did, painting her daughter's bedroom, and the particular story about moving all this manure in her garden with a really young baby strapped to her. And I think pretty much all of us can resonate with this story of not being able to stop, not being able to slow down, not being able to rest, partly maybe because we're wired or partly because we feel that we haven't earned the rest and we can't rest and that we need to be productive. Leila beautifully described how she now acknowledges that she needs to slow down, she needs to listen to herself, and how she does that, and how she's really softened into who she is as a mother, and also prioritizing her own needs and what mothering looks like for her today, which is in stark contrast to that mother of three children who was overwhelmed and burnt out. I hope you enjoy this episode with Leila. Let's get started. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Hi, Sam. Pleasure to be here.
It's great to have you. So we are going to dive into Leila's stories of early motherhood. We're going to dive into your experience of becoming a mother for the first time to your now 10-year-old. So could you tell us a bit about that and how that transition was for you?
Sure. Yeah, 10 years. It's amazing how quickly that ends up going in many ways. But I can't imagine myself being the person I was before at the same time. So it's one of those interesting ones, isn't it? But yeah, I had a journey to conceiving, I suppose, in the first place. So it was, I'd been diagnosed with very large fibroids a couple of years before I conceived my son, and actually before I'd even met my partner. So I always knew it was going to be a challenge to conceive, and was told it was kind of 50-50 whether I would be able to or not. So I share that because I suppose it was this thing that I always really wanted and knew it would be kind of a battle to manage, which I know is something that many of us, you know, go through in one form or another. So when I did conceive and when that pregnancy did go well, that was as far as I thought, you know, that was as far as, you know, all of that energy and attention, that's where it all went. And I didn't have any ideas about motherhood other than that I'd always wanted it. And I presumed I was going to love it. And I suppose, yeah, all of the prep I did extraordinary levels of prep about buggies, amazing Excel spreadsheets. I had, you know, all of this energy and effort preparing for this moment. And then when it came, you know, it was this huge surge of love and all of that pain that we have, you know, but hand in hand with that, that was a huge sense of loss of who I was and a real inability to be able to express it. I remember really clearly one moment with my husband. He was going back to work after about 2 weeks and we were living abroad in Berlin and in Germany. And I was so furious with him for going back to work, even though it was logical and it was planned and all the logical things where boxes were ticked. But the fact that I felt completely trapped by being at home and not being able to leave or have a shower or go to the loo without this baby. But also if you said, will I take the baby? I would have said, absolutely not. I want to be here with this perfect creature, but felt this huge pull in both directions. And I remember having this moment with my husband where I couldn't even articulate it. I was just furious. And completely, looking back now, it's like one of those animals in the wild that are completely terrified and trying to protect themselves and so lash out or whatever. So yeah, I remember that really clearly just, and now knowing what I know and what you know through our training and our studies and our work with matrescence, I have a language and I have a framework around that. But at the time, I really didn't and really felt that huge split and not knowing things I thought would be really important to me weren't, and things that were suddenly hugely important that had never been important to me before. And yeah, I really didn't have the ability to work out what the hell was going on, if I'm really honest. So yeah, that was the beginning of it. And then it was so wanted. He was so wanted, this little boy. So feeling incredibly guilty for feeling anything other than fantastic love for him. So yeah, I guess that was the beginning of it all 10 years ago.
Oh gosh. Thank you for describing that so beautifully, because yeah, I definitely resonate with a lot of that. And I think the listeners probably will as well. And I just want to come back to a couple of things you said there when you talked about a huge sense of loss. Is that something, looking back now, you recognise that you felt, or were you able to kind of understand at the time, or how did it manifest itself, that sense of loss? Were you able to articulate that part of it?
I don't know if I would have been able to articulate very succinctly. I don't know. I wasn't able to articulate anything very succinctly or clearly at the time. But there's a little cartoon sketch drawing that we had on our wall that somebody, a good friend of my husband's, had given to him. And it was always on our wall wherever we went. And it's just a picture of a little cartoon man in a boat. And he's sitting there steering, or whatever you do with an oar, rowing away. You don't steer. Rowing away in this little boat. And around him, the whole sea is completely a massive storm and these huge waves and this tiny little boat. And I remember looking at that image and really identifying with that and just thinking, that's what I feel like. I feel completely at sea and completely isolated. And I can't leave this boat. I'm stuck on this boat. I can't step out of this space. So I remember having that thought. I also remember we lived in Berlin and it was winter moving into spring. My son was born in early December, and we had a balcony that had a tree beside it. And I remember there was this mother bird, I don't know what it was, a starling or something, and she was feeding her babies in the nest. And I used to bring my son outside because he'd calm down. He was a really colicky baby, but he'd calm down in the cold. So we would go and stand on the balcony and we'd be looking at this mother bird getting more and more harried as she went in and out feeding. And, you know, the feathers would be sticking out all over the place. And she just looked more and more of a mess over whatever period of weeks as she fed these birds little baby birds constantly. And I remember too, really kind of going, I'm with you there. You know, I really felt her growing kind of a sense of abandon of herself. So I did have those moments. But I think if I sat down and you asked me that question, I'd say, no, I want to be here. This is brilliant. Perfect. You know, all is fine. So yeah, good question.
I love the two things you talk about there in the boat, feeling really at sea. And so many people have described that to me. So many mothers that I've spoken to, that's been a really similar analogy that they've used, that real feeling of being lost at sea and lots of storms around them. So just to paint the picture a little bit more about that time where you were in Germany, because I think this is important just to touch on here, to understand actually the postpartum care in Germany is quite different to the care that you have in Ireland. I think we have similar, or maybe let's call it lack of postpartum care in England as well. So yeah, just take us through that a bit more.
Yeah, so as I said, I went into my first pregnancy with very little knowledge compared to what I have now in terms of a postpartum. I didn't really know what that was, but the system there supports you and kind of hands you a support after birth, and a cultural expectation of rest as well, which I think is really key, because we can be handed all the support we want, but if the pressure is there to be other than that, I think, you know, we don't accept it anyway. But so there is a period of time after birth in Germany called Wochenbett, which is weeks in bed, and that's a 4-week period of time where you're really expected to deeply, deeply rest. And so in order to do that, you need support. And so the health insurance, public and private health insurance, provide you with a heibama, which is a midwife who is there very much to support you after birth. And she's been there with you through your pregnancy and sometimes in the birthing room as well with you. So she visits you every day for the first 5 days, the first week, and then, you know, intermittently and as often as you need for actually as long as you breastfeed, but for really, you know, that first month is where the crux of the support lies. And just, I guess, in many ways, she gives you permission to rest, and she'll send you back to bed if she feels you're pushing it too much, and she'll bring you teas to help with your milk supply, or she'll give you a stomach massage to help your organs fall back into place, or, you know, help you with latch or whatever it is that you need. And she'll check up on the baby and everything as well, but her primary purpose is to be there for you. And then everybody around you knows you're doing your Wochenbett. So everybody knows that you won't be entertaining, you won't be leaving the house, you will need the bins taken out, you will need food brought to you. And so that's what your community does for you, and then you do for others. And so I benefited from that enormously during I had two of my babies in Berlin. So I, unbeknownst to myself, had a huge amount of support and didn't really know how important it was until later, really, and had other experiences. So even though I didn't know what was happening to me, even though I had all of this kind of inner turmoil of who am I and why am I shifting and why am I changing, I had a baseline level of resilience, I think, because I had been supported in recovering, you know, physically recovering my nervous system, recovering, you know, just from pregnancy and birth. And that really impacted me on every level, on a mental health level as well. I know now, looking. So yeah, that was the experience I had in Berlin with the first two. We then came back to Ireland for baby number three. I was pregnant when we moved back and had a very complicated pregnancy and a premature baby and no support, really. It was very much, had incredible support while pregnant, and I was hospitalized for 93 days in the end of my pregnancy. Amazing healthcare on the public system in Ireland, and then the baby was born and I was no longer in danger, and I there was no more support there bar two kind of checkups. And I really noticed the difference in myself without that one safety net there, you know, physically a lot more kidney infections and mastitis and all those things that so many of us experience. And also then just much higher levels of anxiety and mood swings and, you know, all of that. So, yeah, and I really do now, looking back, put that down to that lack of having that support after birth. And I guess that was really what was the catalyst for me moving into the work that I do now, seeing that huge difference. Yeah.
Well, it's really incredible. Possibly isn't the right word, but it's really incredible just for you actually to see the difference between the two, that real deep rest that you were able to have and the support and the cultural expectation. It was there for you to rest and everybody knew that you were doing it, and then to come back to Ireland and the difference was stark, and actually noticing it in yourself, how that support really, really helped you with your first two, and to actually be able to show the difference, because most people wouldn't know the two different experiences. So it's really interesting to hear from you how the two experiences made the difference. And before we just come on to there on after for your third baby, I just want to come back to the care that you had from the midwife in Germany. And you talk about the sort of physical help that she gives you, but was there much support in terms of talking about your emotional state or what happens to you when you become a mother, or was it more about the kind of physical rest and recovery?
Good question. I think that was the piece of the puzzle that was missing to a degree, for sure. There's no discussion of, you know, you're going through a transformation here and you are going to feel, you know, very different in who you are and, you know, you're going to go through this shift. I think for me, though, that the most important part of that care was having another woman in the room to support and witness and be there. And I could be as raw. I felt very comfortable with her, mm-hmm. as raw and vulnerable as I needed to be in that space. So that, I think, filled that space to a degree. But for me, I knew that I didn't know that something was missing. I now, yeah. now know, looking back, but I still felt like that little person in a boat in you know, at sea. But I had a resilience because I had that support and that care and the acknowledge. I think it was also the acknowledgement of what you have just done and how deserving you are of care afterwards, you know. So yeah, we can have all the teas in China, you know, we can have all those broths and we can have massages and all these things that I've shared and I teach, but actually we can have very few of those and have another person sit with us and witness it and say, you know, I'm here to look after you and to support you and witness you, mm-hmm. and it's worth its weight in gold. So yeah, it wasn't perfect in terms of that, but it certainly went a long way. But yeah, that had been there too. Why do you imagine?
Yeah, the two words that you said there really just stood out to me, just being witnessed and the acknowledgement of what you'd been through. It's such a huge, huge thing. It's not acknowledged. We're not witnessed. It's not honoured. And just the difference that that made of that care that you got and how differently you felt about yourself and that recovery time. So let's jump forward to the birth of your son in Ireland. So this was 4 years ago. Mm. Just talk to us about because you said the pregnancy care that you got was really good and you were in hospital for a bed rest for 90 odd days. So what then happened, whether it was the birth or just immediately after the birth, or the care or the lack of care, and how that impacted on you and how you felt about that time in your life?
Mm. Yeah, it was a crazy time for many reasons. We moved back to Ireland, lock, stock and barrel, after, you know, 8 years in abroad with two young kids, pregnant with a third. And within 2 weeks, I was in hospital with really heavy bleeding and stayed there then for the remaining three months of my pregnancy. So I was already very at sea. You know, I'd been in my house since the Monday and I went into hospital on the Friday. And so that was, you know, it was very, when I moved back after having given birth, I'd spent more time in my hospital bed than I had in my house. You know, I was very at sea in that sense, you know, or, you know, unrooted. I started having contractions eventually at 32 weeks. So I held on a long time. And so he was delivered by C-section and then in a NICU ward for about a month. So I had this great care for those 90 days and it was really about making sure that we kept that baby in and that I was, you know, a real priority within that care. But I would say almost immediately once that baby came out of me, I felt a difference in how I was cared for. You know, the baby was taken off to go to, you know, be looked after. And once I was no longer in danger, and this is because people, you know, staff are way overstretched and all of that, and there has to be priorities, you know. And so I was very low down that priority list and was more or less left to my own devices. And I really needed an awful lot of support at that time, physically, but also just emotionally. And, you know, there was nothing there. There was really, really nothing there. And yeah, once we got home, in terms of assist, I was used to a system where there was a midwife and she would come and she was there and that was it. And there was a public health nurse who came once and weighed the baby and that was it. And, you know, you were expected, or I had to go in, you know, every day to my baby in a NICU ward with having, this is the story of everybody who experiences this. I'm not unusual in this, you know, traveling in and out, pumping all night, going in, sitting, you know, in a NICU ward, just having had major abdominal surgery, there being no resources, no, occasionally a midwife would say, there's an extra dinner, do you want to go down and have it in the back of a ward somewhere? You know, and there, you just weren't a priority in terms of care. And I just needed to be looked after, and I needed somebody to witness me, and I needed somebody to tell me to not unpack all the boxes of books in my sitting room, you know, 3 days after I got home, and to get into bed. But I didn't want to lie in bed because I didn't have my baby, and I was in this adrenaline-filled fight or flight high state of, you know, anxiety looking back. And I needed somebody to say, get into that bed and bring you a cup of tea. It's going to be okay. And that just wasn't there. And I know that it isn't there for so many of us as women going through that. So I tell this story knowing it's not an unusual one, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But the impact of that, I think, was huge then going forward on my physical health and on all kinds of, you know, kind of mental and emotional stability, you know. Mm. So yeah, it was a big moment, I think, for me in terms of realizing that this is not the way that it's meant to be. It's not the way that it should be. And then speaking to lots of female friends here in Ireland and realizing they're all going through a form of this and don't know any other experience. Mm. So I think, you know, it was such a blessing having had that experience of both, because it made me say, okay, this, it can be other than this, and it's not meant to be only just this way. And I'm very, very grateful for having had that.
Gosh. What a contrast of those two experiences, and just knowing that you needed that help and support and it wasn't there, and wanting somebody to look after you, because that is how you feel, isn't it, when you have a baby? That vulnerability is there and you need someone to mother you or look after you. And just knowing that it should have been there as well from what you had in Germany. And exactly as you said, it's just sadly too common. This is actually the normal experience in I know in the UK, and I know in the majority of other Western countries, it's sadly very, very common. And then sets us up for the difficulties that can continue on from that in many different ways. So following on from that, your son was in the NICU. You were going backwards and forwards between your house and his. And how did that period of time continue on for you?
Yeah, I think at the time, you know, I don't think I probably didn't articulate that so clearly. But I think at the time I think deep down, I really badly wanted somebody to look after me. But on the surface, I was in like superwoman mode. Right. I was like picking my kids up from school and, you know, making lunches and making sure I was there for them and going in and out to the baby and like painting my daughter's bedroom walls and like doing vegetable patches and like crazy level of activity and work. And I could not stop. And I think it was this sense of I need to keep going to keep all of this together. And it's that, you know, fight or flight space that so many of us end up in. And yeah, I think that continued, you know, that was the state my nervous system was in. And so when the baby came home, I remember the next morning, I was like, I don't have to go anywhere now. I can just be here and I can start the postpartum now and all this stuff that I told myself. But I was up an hour later, you know, putting on a wash and sweeping the floor. And, you know, I just couldn't, my nervous system would not switch off and I couldn't rest. So yeah, that continued. And I would say continued for a very long time, like years of just keeping going, you know, keeping going. Yeah, it's a hard one to break in many ways, because our society tells us, aren't you brilliant when you're doing that?
Yeah.
You know, you get praised for that. You know, everybody's really impressed with the vegetable patch and the newly painted.
How do you do it all? And
yeah,
I don't know how you do it all. And yeah.
Yeah. But very frustrated and very angry and very snappy and very irritable and, you know, wound up at the same time for sure. I think that's where it showed, you know. So yeah, it didn't stop once the circumstances that were causing it stopped.
So that continued on. You said you continued for several years in this superwoman, doing all the things, but actually feeling very irritable and snappy, as you said. So how did you, because I know from your story that I know from you that that's certainly not how you are now. Was there a catalyst, a moment or a period of time where you made the conscious choice that you wanted it to change, or did it change in a more organic way?
I am not completely zen or doing still. But I'm certainly a different person. But I think there was a number of things that have shifted for me from my experiences of this kind of dual postpartum, you know, in Ireland and Germany. I went searching for, because I, you know, looking to find, okay, why is this system in Germany and does it exist anywhere else in the world? And so it was I was really driven to find some answers to that, which led me to train as a postpartum doula. To be honest, never really with it in mind to work one-to-one with one as one, because I had other one-to-one work that I did as an acupuncturist, but very much to learn about how this support system can impact us and to share that with other women. So I did that, but I think, and the process of studying that and learning that was very kind of reverse engineering healing for me of kind of learning the whys, you know, why I would have felt like that, understanding what was, you know, going through my body was going through, you know, hormonally, physically, my brain changing, all of that stuff. It was so helpful to me to learn that and to understand it. So that's been one part of it, and allowing forgiveness in to that space. And then for me, on discovering the word matrescence and being given a language to describe my experiences, to describe myself 10 years ago and to say this is what it was for me, and to have that fluency around that has been game changing completely for me. And then with that, for me, understanding matrescence in a kind of a bigger picture in a way, and understanding it as this, the way I look on it anyway, as this sort of rite of passage or this thin place, this sort of gateway, this threshold space where we transform from, you know, one version of ourselves into another, and seeing other moments and other gateways in my life then as well, and understanding that as that we're not on this rat race, that we're not in this hamster wheel, that there's these moments of give and these moments of retreat. Reading The Heroine's Journey by Maureen Murdoch and understanding matrescence as a heroine's journey, and that we go into these deep retreat, dark yin kind of feminine spaces at times, and that it's not a negative, has been really helpful to me. And listening to my own body, I think has been, I've had a big journey with my own body, and that's been hugely helpful, I think, to, yeah, understanding what I was experiencing emotionally, somatically, all of that, and then kind of following its lead.
Oh, wow. You described that really beautifully, and taking us back to learning about all these concepts. And sometimes I get feedback of, why do we have to kind of learn, and I put it in inverted commas, learn about motherhood in the kind of formal ways that you can learn about. And obviously you learn about it through your mothering work, but it's the societal concepts of motherhood and the pressures that we live in today and how that can heal us, because we don't mother in a vacuum. We mother in the societal context and understanding that, and just the way that healed your journey and your experience, even right back to your first, when you had that great postpartum experience being held and rested, but actually just how much you felt that transition. And like you said, you didn't know who you were anymore, but you really, really felt it. So I just love the way that you described that journey and how understanding then about matrescence and the journey becoming a woman opened up so many other avenues for you and understandings of your life. And like you said, the gateways. So thank you for sharing that. So now, thinking back to after your third, being the superwoman and doing all the things and doing everything, and how differently does motherhood look for you now compared to after those years after your son was born and doing all the things?
You touched on something there that I think really is the core of the answer. And it's that difference when you say learning in inverted commas about motherhood. And, you know, in many ways, no, you can't, you know, it's a lived experience. But for me, understanding the difference between, you know, there's different ways of phrasing it, but one is, you know, motherhood versus mothering, and motherhood being the societal constructs that we you know, the messaging around motherhood, you know, the PR around it, you know, that what is a good mother, you know, that we should be always happy, we should, you know, to look after our children, to turn up, to put others before ourselves, to be selfless, to be, you know, together, to be on time, to be, you know, I could go on and on and on. All of that messaging that we hear, we see, and I heard and saw them, didn't agree with them, but did not realize how ingrained they were in me anyway, you know, and all of those shoulds, I should be doing this, I should be doing that. For me, it was very much about how important it was to be really present, to be always there for them, to be all of that. But at the same time, I had a huge desire to prove myself to the world, you know, and to, you know, financially be completely independent, to be, you know, recognized, even though I, you know, found that hard to even say out loud, to get, you know, recognition for what I was doing, to prove myself and to show my worth, because motherhood wasn't going to gain me that. That was what I had in my head, you know. And so working through all of that has, I think, brought me to where I am now. And it's been hugely helpful and hugely healing, and working out my stories, you know, that I've told myself, and all of that baggage I've carried and the messages I've received, and then getting the point slowly of just going, actually, I don't care about that. I'm letting go of that. It's not mine to carry. I'm not carrying that. And it's got me, I suppose, long-winded response. Long-winded answer. It got me to a place of both, I think, acceptance that for me, I do want to be independent of my children and work and have that fulfillment in my life. I want to be creative outside of creativity with my children. I want to earn money, and I want to create in the world, and I want to work as an acupuncturist, I want to work with mothers, I want to write, and none of those things are with my children beside me. At the same time, I really want to, but none of those things for me anymore feel like I have to get to the top of everything and to be the best at everything, and they don't have to happen, you know, yesterday. there's a give and a softness around that, that because they're coming from something that I truly want to do and I'm running my businesses in a far more feminine way, whereas before it was a very masculine energy I was applying to it. And around my children and my mothering, it's become more important to me in a way that is really deep, you know, and I feel I'm able, not all the time, but to be far more present and, you know, with them and actually know how truly valuable that is. Not that I'm on time, because I'm never on time to pick them up, but, you know, but just that I'm actually there for them and that I, you know, I'm present with them. And so I guess somebody looking in, it might not actually look that different in a way, but there is a softness and a give to both. And I think that it comes from me being an awful lot kinder to myself and choosing things because they're truly important to me rather than shoulds. Doing a lot of shoulds, you know, in the energy that I applied to things. So, yeah, I guess that's where I'm at the moment. And it might change tomorrow, you know, and I'm quite happy with that. I'm quite happy with the flexibility of it too, because I feel I have a better sense of the core. Mm.
I love that, Layla. Thank you. And this is what this is all about. And that's why I love having guests on to talk about what motherhood looks like for now. And when I say now, thriving in motherhood, because as you said, looking from the outside, it might look like a traditional way, but actually this is how it feels to you, the way that it feels really different to you, the softness and the give. And I love how you explained that, because it is those sometimes small nuances, but actually they make such a huge, huge difference to how you feel about everything in your life. I was talking about motherhood and beyond. I want mothers to thrive in motherhood and beyond. And you described that so beautifully. And two words that you brought up there that are so important on this journey of being a mother is forgiveness and kindness. And two things that we very, very often aren't taught how to be that way with ourselves. And is often quite hard to find for ourselves. So it was lovely that you brought that in. And that was two of the things that really enabled you to move towards where you want to be. And exactly as you say, it's always a work in progress, isn't it? And how important that your work is outside of your mothering, but it's kind of fluid. That was really beautiful. So if there was the old Layla standing in front of you, that Layla who had just had her baby come out of the NICU, who was racing around, doing all the things, doing the vegetable patch, painting her daughter's bedroom. And if she was standing in front of you now, what would you like to say to her?
Wow. It's a funny way to answer it, but I have what I would. There was a moment I went to a therapist about a year after my baby was born, because I was just, yeah, all the things I described, very wound up. I had never seen a therapist before, never done anything like that. And a couple of sessions in, I'm so grateful to her for this, but I described to her the moment with the vegetable patch, the story that I was, as an aside, I described this story to her. I had decided I had ordered 3 tons of manure. This is 3 months after my baby was born. And I had single-handedly delivered that across my garden with a wheelbarrow, with my newborn baby strapped to my chest in February. And I had just mentioned it as an aside to her, I can't remember why. And she stopped me and she looked at me and she had tears in her eyes, which I don't know if you're not supposed to do that as a therapist or not, but she had such huge compassion and kindness in her face. And I'll never forget it. And these tears in her eyes. And she said, I would love to take, makes me cry even thinking about it now, but I would love to take that Layla by the hand and bring her up to bed and tuck her in and rub her head and tell her it's going to be okay. Here's a cup of tea, take a deep breath and hold my hand. And yeah, we were both in bits and I'm in bits again now, I've been telling it, but that is what I needed, you know, a year on to begin to heal. And it was that kindness and seeing that that I wasn't able to reflect to myself at the time. And I think that's the energy I would send back to that Layla again. And so grateful to her for having done that, because it enabled me to then begin to reflect that way of seeing myself that I didn't see at all. I just saw someone who was failing because I wasn't. I'd only managed 2 tons and not 3 tons of manure. That's, it's a very clear example of it. But so that's what I would like to tell her is just to reflect that kindness back and the nourishment and compassion for herself that she didn't really have at the time.
Wow. I love that. Layla, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. There's so much gold in there and so much wisdom. I'm so glad that you came on to share it with the listeners. I know that's going to resonate with so many mothers, and I hope that it helps so many mothers.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoy this conversation and would like to support the podcast so we can reach as many mothers as possible, please share it with your mama friends or leave a rating and review. Sign up for the Confident Comeback newsletter, your regular dose of honesty, support and inspiration for navigating your return to work. And with no hustle harder or productivity hacks in sight, head over to my website, motherhood.co.uk, for more information. See you next time.